Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This podcast is brought to you by Skull Brew Coffee Company. As you all know, this is a business that I started to give back more to conservation. We roast premium coffee and it ships out within hours of roasting. This guarantees that when you order, you get the freshest coffee possible available. The kicker, we donate 10% of our proceeds back to conservation. You choose where the donation goes at checkout. Check us out at skullbrewcoffee.com and let's do some good together and help protect wild places one cup at a time. Visit skullbrewcoffee.com and pledge your support of conservation today. Hello and welcome to the Truth from a Stand Deer Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Clint Campbell, and you're listening to episode number 118. Today, John and I talk turkey and a little hunting culture, so stay tuned. All right. What is going on, folks? Happy Wednesday to you. Hope everyone's feeling good out there. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. It's almost over. Everybody's working for the weekend. I think I quoted that last podcast, but I'm still on my Hall & Oates kick, so I'm going to continue to quote that until I'm over my Hall & Oates kick. Hopefully, it'll run its course by the end of this week. I think there might be some antibiotics for that or something. I got a cool show for you today. I'm not going to belabor this up front. It's been a little while since John and I had a chance to catch up. Last he and I really had a chance to talk. I was actually in Iowa with him, if you all recall, doing a little shed hunting and hanging out with him, doing some scouting, getting ready for this upcoming fall. Which actually reminds me, this upcoming weekend, I need to go ahead and put in for my tags for Iowa. So I need to set a calendar reminder for that because I'm super excited to do that. But the last time John and I really had a chance to talk was when I was out there visiting him and we went to the Iowa Deer Classic and so forth. And pretty much since then, John has been on the road in various states hunting turkeys, doing some photo work, video work for, turkey hunting and so forth. So we've not really had a chance to catch up. So I thought it'd be a good time to just kind of do that now, see what he's been up to, talk about our plans for turkey season. As turkey season here has kicked off in PA in May. So we actually recorded this last week, while he was actually in town and had some availability. But since then turkey season has opened here in Pennsylvania and I had a disastrous opening day, which was essentially, I had a place picked out that I think I had mentioned maybe even a podcast or two ago that I had a piece that I had was looking forward to trying to hunt and, got there nice and bright and early, wanted to get in, early and, see if I could, get a few birds to gobble before they flew down. And when I got to my spot, there were already five trucks parked in the parking area. And this piece of property is not very big that I found. I thought I found a little out of the way piece. I think it's a little out of the way piece for deer season or for archery season specifically. But apparently not so much for turkey. So my turkey season was off to not such a great start, but I am going to take, I think, a morning or two here during the course of the week. That's the one cool thing about one of the many cool things about the new gig that I have is that it's close to home and it's actually close to a lot of the places that I hunt. So I'll actually be able to go hit the turkey woods in the morning before work and then just cruise cruise right into work and be all good. So I'm pretty stoked for that. But before we jump into this podcast, I do want to make mention of one particular thing. I know a lot of you folks out there are probably members of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, as am I. And they have a really cool thing going on. If you, so, you know, around this time, I don't know exactly when the dates are, but, you know, during the spring, early summer, they always do their rendezvous out west somewhere. And this year they're actually doing what is called Muster in the Mountains. And really BHA is putting on their largest gathering on the East Coast to date. Which is super cool, and they've got some folks coming out. I think Lantani is actually going to be there potentially. At least that's what I've heard. I know that they're kind of rounding out what the list will look like for folks who will be there and kind of do speaking events and so forth. But this event is being held on a private farm. It's a guy who's a lifetime member in Morris, Pennsylvania. So, and the dates are June 22nd and 23rd. It's a family friendly event, so I'm definitely going. My wife will be there with me. I'm going to bring my daughter along with me. And they just have a lot of cool stuff going on. So it's a family atmosphere. It's kind of a nice weekend away for some camaraderie and getting to chat with some and spend some time with some like-minded folks and at times talk about things that are all very important to us. So some of the things they will have going on there, there's going to be a bonfire. Of course, there wouldn't be any outdoor excursion worth its salt if there was not a bonfire. So there will certainly be one of those. There'll be some archery and some fly and spin casting competitions. I think there's an archery competition that's happening as well. They'll do a little bit of like a storytelling thing. Turkey calling competition. There's going to be some live music. So if you like to cut a rug or get your rock on, you can certainly do that there. There'll be a wild game cook-off, which is pretty cool. I always look forward to those things. There'll be a multiple pig roast. So not a single pig, but multi-pigs. There'll be backcountry Olympics. So there'll be a little bit of, you know, physical competition there as well. Some raffles and prizes. It's a camping event as well. There'll be, of course, be beer, fireworks, and just a bunch of other stuff going on here during the course of this weekend. So I highly encourage any of you out there who are looking for something to do over the course of the June 22nd and 23rd that weekend to head out there. So does all this, you know, kind of, you know, tickle your fancy, so to speak? I know I've been pretty excited about doing it. And if you want to get involved, all you have to do is head over to their RSVP page and go ahead and let the folks there know that you're going so they can kind of get a head count as to how many folks are going to be showing up. And how might you do that? Well, one, you can head to the blog post show notes for this podcast, and I'll have a link there for you that you can head to the page to RSVP. Or you can go to backcountryhunter.org/muster_in_the_mountains. I know that was super easy, right? So I'll give it to you one more time. That's backcountryhunter.org/muster_in_the_mountains. And you head there and they'll have all the details of the weekend and what time you can check in and so forth. You don't have to just exclusively camp as well. I'm going to be probably camping there in some capacity, but there are some bed and breakfasts and some hotel rooms that are nearby. One of the most important things to mention is this whole event is free. So if you choose to camp on the property, that is free. There's no, you know, admission fee to get in to enjoy the games, the food, the bands or anything. So there's really no reason for you not to show up. So I hope to see you all there. All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of the Truth from the Stand Deer Hunting Podcast. And today I got my brother from another mother, the co-host on this hell ride, Mr. Johnny, by God, Utah Mulligan. What's going on, dude?
Hey, what's happening, man? How you been?
Been all right, man. We haven't talked in a minute. We'll get into all your excursions here in a minute, man. But you've been a busy fellow lately.
Extremely. It's like robbing Peter to pay Paul sometimes, but nonetheless, I've been busy. I've been moving. What is it? Motion creates emotion. So I've been doing a lot of that.
Nice, nice. But I don't think. No, we've talked like a handful of times. Just, I think maybe even just once since I left Iowa, since I came out to see you. You know, that's how busy you've been. But like, I think I left you with a little gift though before I left Iowa, if I'm not mistaken, right?
yeah. You brought the Pennsylvania bubonic plague, infected the whole house.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Everybody was coughing and hacking, and I probably didn't have it as bad. I mean, it was just, it was like a really, really bad cold.
Yeah.
there was one day that I was chilling like I had the fever, you know, but I didn't have a fever. So I don't know what the heck that was, but whatever. It didn't last too long, you know, 4 or 5 days, and it was gone.
4 or 5 days, and it was gone.
Yeah. Well, just four or five days I didn't sleep or hold down any chow or anything like that, but it's all good.
Yeah. So I don't remember if we even talked about this on, like, the session we did at your place, but so when I got to John's, you know, you and your wife were all concerned, or I should say you didn't give a shit, to be honest. Your wife was all concerned that I was coming over and you had a sick kiddo at the house or whatever. And so I get there and she's like, we had one with the flu that had just
gotten over it or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so your wife asks you, like, hey, did you tell Clint that, you know, we have a sick kiddo at the house, so maybe he doesn't want to come this week or whatever? And you're like, hell no, I didn't tell him. And I'm like, that's awesome. And which wasn't a big deal, you know. I mean, it's like, you know, I've got a kid too, you know. It's like my wife works in a school district and stuff like that, so it's like I'm around all kinds of germs all the time. So it's, you know, if anyone could, you know, fend it off, I probably could. So, you know, I'm there the whole time thinking, like, man, I'm probably going to get sick when I get home, you know, it's at some point or whatever. And little did I know that I was bringing the creeping ninja with me, because, dude, it's literally I was on the plane back home and I'm sitting there and I'm just like, man, I feel like garbage, because my daughter was sick like the entire week leading up to me coming out to see you. And it was just like headache, tired, no fever whatsoever, but just like completely put her down for a week, but no like real symptoms other than just feeling like garbage. And I basically had that when I got back, and I hadn't talked to you at all for like a couple of weeks, because you were doing some traveling, and we'll get into that. You were doing some early season, you know, down south turkey hunting style. And I knew you were getting back because I saw your Instagram feed. And I was like, I'm going to give John a call and see what's up. I give you a call and like the first things out of your mouth, like, I think we said hello. And you were like, dude, I don't know what the hell you brought from Pennsylvania. And that was like the first part of the conversation. So my apologies.
It was
for,
bad.
Yeah, it
oh,
wasn't.
No.
It
I
wasn't
mean, no you know, and it's funny because when our youngest was little, we joked and we said, we've literally had a cold for 5 years.
Yeah.
Because it was like every germ from like daycare and kindergarten and first grade, you know, like everything that they were exposed to, they brought home. So there was like a 5 or 6 year period where I swear I had like walking pneumonia, you know, every day of my life.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, you build up an immune system and whatnot, plus being a cop, I don't know what I was exposed to half the time, but I had like ironclad immunity. So now it's been 3 years since I've been a cop, and all my kids are, you know, my youngest is 10, so we're not getting the creeping crud brought home all the time. So now whenever we do get exposed to it, we're like, update the will, I'm dying, I'm checking out.
It's like I got the Wambanya. I don't know if I ever told you the story about Wambanya. Did I?
I don't think so.
Okay, so my brother-in-law, you know, when he was in high school, there was this kid that was in his class, and it was, you know, he was a good kid. He was one of his best friends, but like he wasn't the brightest bulb on the tree, shall we say. And they were having this spelling thing, and this was high school, so it was more of like an end of the year fun thing. Like the teacher didn't have anything to do, so it's like we're just going to throw words out and like someone go up on the board and spell them or whatever, and we'll see, you know, who has the most points or whatever, killing time essentially, right? It's their senior year or something like that. And so they're up there and this kid goes up there, you know, like my brother-in-law goes up there and he writes his word or whatever. And it's like, you know, he gets it right and whatever. And then his friend goes up to write it and they say, you know, pneumonia, right? To write it. He spelled pneumonia, W-W-A-M-B-A-N-Y-A, Wambanya. That's how
nice.
That's how he spells pneumonia, or how he thought pneumonia was spelled. So anytime I talk about getting sick, if it's really bad, I just refer to it as the Wambanya, because that's like the worst form of sick. But
that's funny, man.
But we both made it through the other side. We're both feeling better, and you're on to turkey season, man. So, dude, you've been kind of all over the place already for turkey season. So let's start. I think if I'm not mistaken, you were in Florida chasing turkeys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Hold on. Let me ask this first. Have you ever hunted Florida before?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Right. my parents have a place in Florida, and I haven't, well, I've been there once in the past 5 years.
Right.
Florida's not a big thing for me. I'm not a big sand ocean, like, that's just not, you know, that's just not my thing. But nonetheless, there was turkeys in Florida, and that's pretty awesome. So,
yeah.
And those things are pretty, you know, they got some cool colors. But, you know, we talked about it in the other podcast, and that was the other thing, too. Like, after you left my place, I had just been basically laid off.
Yeah.
You know, right before that. So while you were here, I was like, damn, I really need to be probably working or finding work, you know? And here I am walking around the woods with Clint, you know, for 3 days.
I know, right.
So as soon as you left, I was like, man, I gotta buckle down here, you know? But nonetheless, I've been real good friends over the years with the owner, Tevis McCauley of Whitetail Heaven Outfitters. And their home base is down in Nicholsville, Kentucky.
He's a good dude, which, man. You introduced me to him when we were at ATA.
He's hilarious,
dude.
Man.
The guy is a riot. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. No, he's just, I mean, he is high speed all the time. So their main lodge is in the hometown where I grew up. He's younger than I am, but that's kind of how we met, through mutual friends and stuff. But anyways, he had, you know, word travels fast, and he had heard through the grapevine that I was doing this freelance thing now. And so he called and was like, hey, I need you to be in Florida. And I'm like, yeah, when's that? And he's like, tomorrow. I'm like, what? Nice. He's like, yeah, I need you in Florida tomorrow. Here's four airports that you can fly into, and we'll drop you off. Just pick one. And, so anyways, he calls back and he's like, here's my credit card information. Just get, you know, get just your ass get down there. Here. So yeah. I was like, what am I doing? And he's like, photo. I need you for like 4 or 5 days doing photo video. I'm like, yeah, let's rock and roll. I'm like, oh man. I'm like, I'm still coming. I was like, you know, my birthday's coming up. And, I don't think that there's ever been a time in the last 4 years that my wife and I have actually spent our birthdays together.
Right.
Just one reason or another, something comes up. Like, I was out in Montana or whatever, you know, but,
right.
So anyways, he's like, well, I'll tell you what, bring your bow. I'm like, do what? He's like, well, yeah, since it's your birthday, that's your birthday present. Bring your bow.
Nice.
And he's like, I don't care if, like, you take a day and go chase some birds or whatever. I'm like, heck yeah, this is awesome. Right. So, anyways, I go down there, and weather's great. Their guys are they're laying birds down left and right. So I'm just bouncing around, photo. You know what I mean?
Right.
And shooting video. And then finally, like the last day, I'm like, hey, Tevis, you don't mind? I'm going to take my bow this time and today, and I'm still going to do photo video work, but I'm going to take my bow with me and see if I can get one. And he's like, yeah, it's the last, you know, it's your last day. You better. And of course, you know. 25-mile, 30-mile-an-hour winds. It's cloudy, and it dropped to about 45 degrees.
Jeez.
And it had been like I was getting burnt every day putting on sunscreen.
Right.
So the birds were less than active and less vocal than they had been before. So I didn't even see a tom at all. But didn't hear one, didn't see one, saw a couple of hens. But so I did that. Then I made my way back to Iowa, and I had a trip to Bozeman, went out to Montana and, hung out and, worked on some stuff with Mystery Ranch, and can't really disclose all the details of that just yet, but, it's pretty awesome.
It's pretty rad.
And, yeah. So it's pretty awesome. I had a good time out there with those guys, and, came home, and lo and behold, we're in the process of listing our house with Whitetail Properties. A good friend of mine and a PA boy,
yep.
Ben Harshen.
He's a veteran of the show.
He's a veteran of the show. Yeah. Ben is my listing agent. You know, he still owns Huntera, but he's also an agent, with Whitetail Properties. So he's going to list, my property here, my house. And we have a basement that was partially finished. We've been working on it the whole time we've been here. And we kind of buckled down and said, okay, we got to get this thing done. We got to get it done now. So I was slapping up drywall. I had to build four walls in the new room, slap up some drywall. Heck, was starting to run out of time. I ended up contracting out somebody to come and do the mud finish and texturing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So he knocked it out in 2 days, and it would have taken me 2 months.
Yeah.
What'd I do after that?
Well, before we go there, what part of Florida were you in?
It's outside of Orlando.
Okay. Was it like Claremont? Yeah,
outside
or
of Orlando.
Apopka?
I mean, we're talking like BFE, Florida. I didn't even know that existed.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I lived in Orlando proper for however many years I was there, 9 years or something like that. But there's some pretty BFE areas out there, man. You get out around like Claremont, I think, is like one area that's pretty out there, if I'm not mistaken. There is Apopka, which is pretty, the Apopka forest out there is huge. And I'm trying to think, there's another area that I used to go. There was this campsite that I used to go to usually on my birthday, because like down there, man, it's like you don't want to be outside camping and doing anything like that basically after mid-April. And so like my birthday was usually like the cutoff if I was going to go camp or do anything outside and be relatively comfortable. And there was this fish camp, and I can't remember the name of the lake or the part of, like, it's not even suburban Orlando. It's just like the country outside of Orlando that it's in. But like this, it's a well-known bass lake that does like national bass fishing tournaments. And we would go there and, just camp for like a long weekend and drink beers and, just hang out.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, for people that have never been there, it's like they think of Orlando or they think of Florida or, they think of Miami and Orlando and maybe Tampa, but there are some pretty rural areas out there. Like you get into some pretty gnarly places. I've never hunted Florida. It's what was your kind of impression of hunting the Florida kind of scene?
So the birds they're not like Easterns. I mean, they don't gobble as loud or as often, it seems like. The first day we were out there, I jumped into a ground blind. I've got the camera equipment and whatnot, and I didn't want to mess up anybody's hunt, so I just jumped into ground blind with somebody, and I'm filming these birds come across the field, and they were like, oh, look, there's a hen. And I said, what? That's a crow. And I'm like, actually, I don't even know if that's like a crow. That's just like a little blackbird. No, right. It was a hen. I mean, they're just that small,
Right.
So that was kind of funny, but they don't have that thundering gobble. It almost sounds like half the volume of a Jake. There were shorter gobbles, and I don't know. It was different. But man, they're awesome birds. Their colors are just crazy.
Yeah, man,
I mean, the orange and the red and the blues are just insane.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the pictures you were laying out on Instagram, and it's just, yeah. I mean, it's pretty incredible. It looks starkly different than I see in Pennsylvania,
Sure, sure.
But
yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the birds that the guys were killing, they were, 18 pounds, 19 pounds, stuff like that.
Right.
And, you put that next to, one of these big Iowa 30-pound jokers, it's like,
yeah,
it's like, what the heck?
Like the one Billy C killed the other day, like 26 pounder. That was pretty big bird.
Yeah, that's a big bird. Yep.
Yeah. But all right, so we're doing tracking John here is what we're doing. We're tracking John in Utah.
I need a GPS tracker.
Yeah, I need to put a GPS on you. So we were in Bozeman with Mystery Ranch, and then we got the house listed with Ben. Yep, and
home improvement projects.
Yep. And then where?
I had a gas line company called Midwest Easement Services. They're actually getting ready to change their name because when they first started their business, they did a lot of easement services. Now they're not doing as much easement work. They're still doing a lot of power line clearing and stuff, but they're doing a lot of welding and a lot of steel pipe gas line stuff. So, anyways, they called and they're like, look, we need some new pictures for our website, social media, and we need some video and some drone work done. We want to have just a badass video. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like we want to have something over the top that just shows all of our machines, equipment, and the stuff that we can do, you know, flex the muscle video.
Right.
So I went and hooked up with those guys down in Missouri and Illinois for a few days. Did that. Came home, then turned right around and I went down to,
was it Kentucky?
Went down to Whitetail Heaven to their Central Kentucky Lodge. They were hosting a turkey competition. It was turkey competition 1 of 2, two man teams. You know, in Kentucky, you can take two birds in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think they had 75 teams enter, if I'm not mistaken. 75, 78, something like that. Might have even been more. Might have been like closer to 80. But nonetheless, between three properties, their northern Kentucky property, western property, and their central Kentucky. And I don't remember the exact number of teams, but they have more properties than they had teams.
Hmm.
So the way that they did it was the teams showed up, they drew for numbers, and all of the properties are laid out on a piece of paper in kind of a blind draw in right. like a white envelope.
Mm-hmm.
So you have no idea what property you're drawing, and you draw. And at the end of each day, you can redraw. You can put in for a redraw and that kind of stuff. Some people can trade properties if need be or something, but nonetheless, they do very, very strict rules. They have when a bird is shot, you know, you take a picture of the bird and send it in to one of the, you know, officials with Whitetail Heaven. You bring the bird back, and then they have a scorer with a witness, and then they also have a second person score. You know, they do the standard weight, beard length, spurs, and they mm-hmm. do the standard NWTF calculation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you come up with your total score, you know, per bird. And they post everything up on a big dry erase board and, through FaceTime and everything, you know, everybody's able to see all the boards, you know, at all times and
right.
see where they're at. But, when it was all said and done, after 2.5 days of the competition, there was a team from Southern Indiana. They went home with $35,000 cash.
Yeah. I saw that, man. That's crazy. It's I would never have a snowball's chance in hell to win, considering I never killed birds, but I could imagine what it would be like to win $35,000 for hunting.
It's awesome. It's super cool. Well, and then second place was 20 grand, third place was 10 grand. And,
yeah.
I mean, there was, you know, six guys went home extremely happy. And I talked to guys that finished like fourth and fifth and ninth and 30th. And I'm like, so, you know, what'd you think? And I recorded testimonials from these people. And I said, so what, you know, what's up? And they said, look, this is the most fair hunting competition I've ever been involved in. I had a blast, you know. Yeah. I've already signed up. I've already prepaid for next year's competition as well.
Right. That's cool, man.
So it was cool. You know, like I said, there wasn't any sore losers. And even though these guys were competing for money, every night at the lodges, everybody sat there at the same dinner table and broke bread together and had a few drinks together and cut up and laughed. And people were, here, take this call with you tomorrow. Try this one out. It worked pretty good for me. And, you know, just right. it was pretty neat. It was a pretty cool deal. And it was neat to be involved in it as, you know, not a hunter, just somebody from the outside in, you know, taking photos of the whole project.
Right. Some cool camaraderie, you know, that's cool.
Yeah.
My dad's done something like that with whitetails at one point. He went to a place in Missouri, and I don't remember where it was, where it was something similar, where I think it was like the top, and they did it throughout the entire season, you know, because it was an outfitter, and they would kind of, you would, you know, take whatever animal you were going to take, whatever, you know, buck you were going to take, and then they would bring it in, they would score it, and they would kind of keep track of it and stuff like that, and they would keep track of, like, the entire, it was either the entire season or for, like, 2 weeks or something like that. Oh, 2 weeks for some reason sticks in my head. And after those 2 weeks, they basically figured out who the top 20 was, and, like, the top 20 was in the money or a free hunt, because you hit a certain point where it's like they weren't paying out anymore, but if you were in the top 20, you were guaranteed, like, a hunt the following year if you wanted one. You know, so, which was cool. And he had a great time doing it. You know, it's, I want to say he went out there with my one uncle. those two went out, and the old man was one spot away from, you know, getting a free hunt the following year, but got a nice deer nonetheless, and he had a great time. And that was what he was just kind of saying. It was like just a bunch of dudes that were there to hunt, had a good time cutting up, you know, hanging out in camp and stuff like that. There was no like competitiveness that you would think of like in sports or something like that. He said everyone was pretty cool. Everyone was there to hunt regardless whether or not there was money involved or not. It was just if they were going to get a free hunt or something out of it, you know, for hunting, it was just like that was a, you know, cherry on top or icing on the cake, I guess, so to speak. But so after Kentucky, you just recently got back from Kentucky, right?
I did. Yeah.
And so you finally.
I left there yesterday morning, which was, man, it was cool because I wrapped up there Monday evening and I went to my mom and dad's house. My parents actually live like 15 minutes away from their lodge. Nice. So I went to my mom and dad's, hung out with them a little bit Monday night, and then got up Tuesday morning. And it was like deja vu. It was almost like a flashback to like, you know, me being in high school or something, living at my parents' house. You know, my mom, she, even though I'm 41, she still treats me, you know, like I'm in high school or something. And
yep.
So she's like, well, are you going to sleep all day? And I'm like, what's going on? Like, it's like 7 o'clock in the morning, you know?
Right.
And she's in there slaving away in the kitchen. Nice. And she's in there, you know, eggs and sausage and bacon and biscuits and gravy. And, you know, is there anything else you want? And I'm like, no, like I'm good.
Right.
But a big glass of sweet tea, sat down there and had breakfast, you know, with my parents. And
that's cool.
I left out of there. I met with one of my pro staff guys. He lives in Northern Kentucky. And then I picked up my antelope in Northern Kentucky as well.
I saw that, man. How cool was that to pick that thing up?
I've been wanting to get my hands back on that guy for a long time.
I bet, man. I was just going to say that we'll back up for 1 second just for the folks out there that don't know, you know, or that maybe started listening like, you know, recently or something like that. John went to Montana on a speed goat hunt with a bow. And like at the very end of the hunt, keep me honest here. It's like, I'm pretty sure it was like the last day of the hunt you actually killed this goat, and it was like you couldn't have pushed it much further to the breaking point of like, okay, I'm going to leave and eat my tag. So that was in what, 2017? Yeah.
Well,
right,
it was technically an overtime. It was going to be a 4-day hunt, and it was really late, you know. Obviously we got back after that fourth day, so we decided we were going to go ahead and just sleep that night in Montana and then wake up at like 5 a.m and go ahead and get a early fresh start, you know, and drive back to Iowa. We got up and I had this overwhelming sense. I'm like, I just really can't believe I'm going to leave Montana and, you know, eat this tag after coming so, so close, you know, on a couple goats. But, I told myself, I said, okay, if I don't have an arrow in a goat by 8 a.m., that's it. I'm calling it. So I went back to this public land spot and actually put an arrow in this. It was my last arrow that I had with me, not in my quiver. It's the last arrow I had in my possession. And I put an arrow in this goat at 7:37 a.m. at 23 minutes left.
Yep.
So anyways, it was a public land hunt there in Montana, 72-yard shot. And he barely broke Boone and Crockett on his score. So I dropped him off at the taxidermist in the spring of 18 when I went down there to turkey hunt. That's when I took him down there and dropped him off. And been waiting for him to get done. And I knew I was going to be heading to Kentucky at some point this spring, you know, probably to chase turkeys. But I didn't know it was going to be quite a couple weeks as early as going down there with Tevis and those guys. So anyways, I was able to pick him up, and he's hanging on the wall now.
Nice.
So I got home last night, like 12:30, and then, of course, I stayed up until I got all these pictures edited for Tevis and Whitetail Heaven.
Right.
Got those all uploaded in a Dropbox. Got up this morning and started on editing some video footage for another client that I'm working with. Had to go run some errands today. Went and sat in a turkey blind this afternoon and almost got it done tonight. It came really, really close.
Nice, man. And so, dude, you got a lot of turkeys under your belt right now. as far as like for most everyone else, you know what I mean? Like I'm still waiting for I'm still waiting for the season to come in. Like that's
I know. Well, it's one of Tevis's boys. He went. I actually took him hunting my last day that I was in Kentucky, and I didn't want to booger up anybody on their last day of their contest for their money competition.
Right.
You know, because you know what's going to happen. So if somebody was to miss a bird, or the bird gets hung up and doesn't come in, they're going to be like, "Oh, damn, cameraman must have been moving or something." You know.
Right. Right.
So I didn't want to mess with anybody's crap. So Tevis is like, I said, "Hey, but I do want to go out and just get some turkey footage, you know?" So, he said, "Hey, you know, grab one of my boys." So I took one of his sons, and these kids they're something else, man. they live for hunting, you know? And
yep.
So I took one of his boys out, and we were on our way back to the lodge, and I looked at him and I said, "Micah," and I think Micah's like 8.
Right.
I think he's 8. I said, "Micah, is there such thing as being burnt out on turkey hunting and I haven't even hunted myself yet?" You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I'm about sick of turkeys already. And I haven't even bought a tag for myself yet. But I love turkey hunting. I don't get into turkey hunting as much as some people. I mean, it's a lot of fun and I'm always going to participate and I'm always going to do it. But, you know, I know guys that take like 3 weeks vacation just to turkey hunt.
Yeah. I can't get into it like that. I mean, for one, I'm just not that great at it. And I kind of use it like I like to turkey hunt. It's for me. And we've talked about this before. For me, it's more about the winter and the shit weather's over. So I'm able to actually get outside and kind of enjoy being outside again. Cause the weather's kind of getting nice. And then I honestly, you know, in PA at the beginning of turkey season, I forget, I think it's at least maybe the first 2 weeks. I'd have to look at the book to remember. This is how bad it is. I usually never hunt much beyond like the first, like 2 weeks of the season for the most part. But, you can only hunt till noon, you know, for like at least the first weekend, maybe the first two. And so, you know, you get up crack of dawn and you hunt till noon and then your day is kind of shot or whatever, cause you're beat. So what I usually will do is I'll go out and I'll hunt, you know, for however many hours and maybe I see a bird, maybe I don't. And then once I kind of get, you know, bored or if there's nothing working or I'm not getting any action, then I'll just kind of get up and start scouting for deer season. You know what I mean? And kind of spend the rest of my day doing that. And that's actually what my plan is this year is I found a piece of public that's near me. I think I text you a picture of the rub that I found in this area. I found some really good sign on a piece of public ground that I'm pretty excited about. And the NWTF actually, you know, sponsors this piece of ground. So they actually have some, you know, food plots in there and it's pretty good habitat for turkey and stuff like that. I saw some turkey sign while I was there. So I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to hunt this spot for turkey season and see what happens. And then if nothing happens, then I know that I wanted to spend a little bit more time there scouting just to kind of maybe actually pick out a couple trees. Cause the last time I went in, I basically saw some good deer sign and know what general areas I'd like to be in. But now I kind of want to go back and maybe pinpoint a tree or two that I'd like to get into and mark those. That way I know where I'm headed, you know, whenever the season rolls around. Cause I'm not familiar with this piece at all. It was the first time I'd stepped foot on it. So yeah, I studied it from aerial, you know, from aerials and stuff like that. But I just put one day of walking around. So I'd like to mark some spots that I want to get into, but that's really my turkey hunting for the most part. I mean, I like doing it, but you'll never mistake me for a guy who's really good at turkey hunting. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm a good turkey hunter myself. Yeah, I've killed a few of them. But
you ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I've got a couple of calls, a couple of series of yelps and some fly down cackles that I think are decent. and they've worked for me in the past. So I just keep running the same calls. I don't always know what's the right call to make at the right time, like when I should be clucking and when I should be purring all the time or whatever. Right. I kind of throw the kitchen sink at it, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And
yep.
I don't know if the times that it doesn't work, it's not supposed to. And I don't know if the times it works, if anything would have worked, you know what I mean?
So, right.
I do know some really good turkey hunters. And a lot of them, to be honest, a lot of them are a lot of Southern guys, you know, Mississippi, Georgia, yep. Alabama, you know, guys like that.
Yep.
Seems like turkeys, and maybe the thing is because their deer aren't that big. Right. And turkey is their big animal, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. There might be something to that. I'm not sure why turkey hunting so much. I shouldn't say, I don't know definitively, but if I feel like.
It seems like it's bigger down south.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's like when you think about like the dudes who are in these turkey calling competitions and stuff like that. Like, you never get a guy like from New York. You know what I mean? Like, in a turkey calling competition, it's always like you said, a guy from Missouri.
Are you saying that you've seen the list of the top 10 in turkey calling competitions, and are you stereotyping their hometown?
Yeah, I might be stereotyping.
Like Booger Bottom, Georgia.
Like Booger Bottom, Georgia. Exactly. You know what I mean? It's like that's where they're from. You know, it's like if you're from a place.
First place.
Yeah.
Jimmy Paul Ray.
Yeah. Guy with three first names. That guy wins.
He had three first names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You automatically win. Like, you're naturally a good turkey caller if you have three first names. Done.
Hey, I'm going to throw out a disclaimer. I'm from Kentucky, so I can make fun of rednecks. It's okay.
And I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I'm allowed to, too.
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah, which might even be more redneck than anywhere.
You guys are just white trash. What are you talking about?
Dude.
You're not hillbillies. You're just white trash.
No, we tried to class ourselves up a little bit by calling ourselves hillbillies. You know what I mean? That's how bad it is.
Don't try to church it up there, Clint.
Yeah, trying to church that shit up a little bit, man. but, yeah, so... I'll be going out like season open here in I think it's like 2 weeks from the moment that we're recording this. Oh, actually no, it's next week. It'll be a week from Saturday. So I'm going to go out on that piece.
How bad does that suck, having to come out of the woods at noon?
Dude, it's awful. Well, because this was the deal let me put it this way. It's always slightly bothered me. Right. Even whenever I was a kid growing up, Dad and I would go turkey hunting. It just kind of bothered me because I was like, you know, I like to hunt. And when I was a kid growing up, you know, it's like I worked, you know, odd jobs during the week after school and stuff like that. And so the only day I really had to hunt was Saturday. And during, you know, spring turkey, it's like I'd get to hunt for a handful of hours and that was it that week, you know. And then it didn't bother me so much for like a while, like when I got a little older, only because it was like a lot of times by like noon, I was like, man, I got like five things I need to get done today. You know what I mean? Like, I got to get out of the woods. Because as you and I talked about before, it's like, I just push all my chips to the middle for deer season, right? That's when I spend my time. But now that I'm at a place, I guess, and my daughter's a little bit older and it's like, you know, I can spend a little bit more time away and stuff like that. It bothers me again. And particularly because, you know, I had my daughter out 2 years ago. She and I went out and I actually had a bird working for her, and then a rainstorm blew in and blew the bird out. And then, you know, we took cover, and then she didn't want to go back out the second half of the day, which was not the second half of the day, but the second half of the morning, which was fine. So I ended up going back out, found that bird, basically semi-stalked him around the entire property, like kind of kept my distance, but kept calling so I could kind of hear where he was moving so I could try to like get in front of him. And I ended up catching back up to that bird at like, so I don't know, I think the rainstorm blew in at, let's say, like 7:30, 8 o'clock, and I got back out around 9, and then I caught back up to that bird at like 11:30 and was working him, and he was coming, and then he got hung up like right before noon, and then it was noon, and I couldn't make another move on him. But that was like one of the coolest turkey hunts I'd ever had, and it was cut short because I had to stop hunting at noon. And I don't really know what the rationale behind it is. I'm sure there's some type of, you know, in the bylaws somewhere mentions why you can't hunt beyond noon, but I'm not clear on what it is. So, but yeah, so long way to say, yes, it sucks. But that brings up another topic, man. Like, so I don't know how aware you might be of this, but they're changing some of the deer hunting, or hunting in general, I guess you could say, in Pennsylvania this year. So historically, and people are up in arms about this, which I don't quite understand why, but so rifle season for deer hunting or gun season comes in always historically. I shouldn't say historically. I think it's since like the mid 70s or something like that. It comes in on the first Monday. I'm sorry. The first Monday after Thanksgiving, always that Monday, right? Since like the mid 70s. And now they've decided they've actually passed the law. Now, I don't know why it was on a Monday. Every other season that we have comes in on a Saturday, right? And so now they've passed the law or changed the law to where now that first day of gun season is going to come in on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, which I was like, hey, that's great. You know, people, if they don't have Monday off, that'll give them a chance to go out and hunt, you know, or, you know, if they, you know, don't have the vacation time to take, they don't have to spend a day of vacation time to hunt, you know, they can hunt Saturday or they can still take Monday off, hunt Saturday and Monday, you know, whatever the case is. But then I saw a lot of folks like upset about it on Facebook on Instagram and Facebook, you know, on social media. And I wasn't quite sure what the uproar about it was. And people were talking about like, it's hunting heritage and like, you know, it's something about family. And I wasn't quite sure where everyone was going with it. Cause I was like, it's an extra day to hunt. If you don't want to hunt Saturday because it changes the tradition of your hunting camp, then don't hunt Saturday and then just hunt Monday. You know what I mean? Like everyone can choose how they would like to use it, but it just seemed like everyone was in an uproar over it, over nothing, in my opinion. So that's changed. And then Sunday hunting is actually going to go up for a vote here at some point. I don't know exactly when. And I'm crossing fingers, feet, hands, arms, everything. It feels like we actually have some momentum that it may occur. So we may get out of the Stone Ages with that, which is pretty cool. Thoughts?
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know that Sunday hunting, I don't think that they'll roll it in full on, like where it's like every Sunday you can hunt. I think they're probably going to do tapered back versions of like, maybe you get, you know, two Sundays, you know, in October and two Sundays in November to hunt archery, or maybe you get one Sunday each month to hunt archery, and then maybe you get one of the Sundays during rifle season. Like, I don't know yet, you know, what it'll end up being, but they'll probably do some type of scaled back version just to make sure that it doesn't, basically to prove to everybody who thinks it's going to change the world that it isn't in fact going to really change anything. You know, so.
Well, from the outside looking in, it seems like you're all's antler restriction. Like that's definitely one good thing that they did. Mm-hmm. That seems like it's really working.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's definitely made a difference. And that was the thing. Like there's still people that oppose it, you know, for whatever reason. You know, I'm a fan of it. I've been a fan of it since it begun, basically. You know, I don't see a downside to it necessarily. Now, I know people will argue it's like, hey, you know, you might be restricting, you know, the opportunity of a guy who or girl who maybe only gets out like a handful of times a year, you know, and maybe they see a fork horn and that's the only deer they're going to see in those 2 days and they're not going to get to shoot a deer. Right. And I totally understand that.
But shoot does.
Right. And that would be my response is like, you know, shoot does. Now I understand like maybe they have limited time to get out and maybe they wouldn't be able to get out during doe season because during gun season, I think, and this is how bad it is. Like I've not hunted gun season in a while. So it used to be, you couldn't hunt does until the second week of gun season. Uh-huh. So that person might have to, you know, take a day off or hunt a Saturday or whatever the case is. But I understand that argument. But the other thing is too, is that you can't make poor decisions just to appease the few, right? The larger, I think, you know, benefit is that if people don't see good deer, so I'll put it this way, I'm going to put it in really harsh terms because I think this is the only way that it makes sense. The person who goes out and hunts like 2 days a year isn't going to stand up on his soapbox and fight for hunting or Second Amendment rights or any of these things, right? So appeasing that person, while yes, we would like to keep them in hunting because we could use all the numbers we get, I'm not interested about keeping that person happy necessarily. What I'm more interested in is the hunters that are going to remain in hunting and that I would like to remain in hunting and that may only remain in hunting if they have opportunities at what they consider to be quality animals. Right. Because those are the ones who are actually going to put money into the system and actually have a voice and oppose those who try to, you know, remove some of the privileges that we have and things like that. So I think, I don't think there's any perfect solution. I think we just have to balance it the right way. And so when I look at that, that's why I look at antler point restriction and say, hey, I've seen better deer now that I'm older than I did ever whenever I was growing up as a kid, which I think does a lot to keep hunters in the woods and wanting to go back and try to, you know, get that more mature deer and keeps them interested and keeps, you know, allows them to increase the challenge of their opportunity. You know, someone could argue the opposite side of that, I'm sure, but that's kind of how I see it. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. And you know, I always, to kind of go back, it's whenever somebody says, man, I only have 3 days to hunt and having these antler restrictions, you know, I mean, I'm a meat hunter. I'm like, well, why didn't you shoot a doe?
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? Everybody claims I'm a meat hunter, but they pass 22 does.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. It's an age old debate. You're never gonna appease everybody, but at the same time, don't make a stupid rule to make seven people happy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think I mentioned this on one of the other, an upfront of a podcast that I put out not too long ago, but Galen Swigart, he lives out here on, well, eastern and northern part of PA. He does a lot with BHA, the Pennsylvania chapter here, and he's actually doing a documentary about Sunday hunting right now that he's filming, that he came to my house and interviewed me for part of that. Beau Martonic, I know, is part of that as well, or got interviewed for it. So I think he's going to be putting it out this summer, if I'm not mistaken, which would be kind of cool. I think he's trying to kind of match it up to when, you know, that when they're probably going to be talking about it in terms of like the legal terms and whether or not it's going to pass the sniff test to possibly be implemented or not. But I don't know that anybody's anticipating anything's going to happen for this season. I think, you know, ideally, I think they would pass it early enough that they could do a trial run this year and maybe have a handful of Sundays that folks could hunt just to prove to the, you know, to the non-consumptive outdoor users that we're not going to change the way they use the outdoors if we're allowed to hunt on Saturday. Because that's part of the argument, too. There's a lot of really poor arguments out there that I don't think are well thought through in opposition. But, you know, they're entitled to their opinion. And I think, you know, like I'd mentioned whenever, you know, we were doing that interview is that we're in a position that this is a privilege that we have and not a right. So we still have to kind of earn it, even though we might be footing the bill for the lion's share of the payment that the agencies get to manage these things. Right. But at the same time, you know, I think we have to put our best foot forward to prove it, that it's not going to change people's usability of the land outside of hunting, you know, during those times of the year. And that's okay. You know, it's just be good stewards and do the right thing and prove that it's not going to, you know, I don't mind proving it because I don't think it's going to change anything. I don't think it's going to change the hiker or the bird watcher's opportunities at all. So I'm fine with a rollout plan to prove it, so to speak. But so that's what's going on in the good old Keystone State, man. And that actually brings me to another question I wanted to ask you. I had this conversation with my buddy Wilson McSwain, and I actually had this conversation a little bit with Cody DeQuisto, oddly enough. We started talking about culture and hunting a little bit and talking about the idea that, you know, hunting recruitment is such a hot topic. And you'll kind of know where I'm going with this, because you and I, the one podcast we did with Cody, we did start talking about like extreme sports and those types of things and how those activities in our youth kind of influence the way we hunt and so forth. He and I had a conversation, you know, on the phone, not during a podcast, but and it went a little further than that, to where we started talking about just the idea of, you know, with hunter recruitment and stuff like that, like, you know, a lot of hunters nowadays aren't necessarily coming from rural areas, right? And so, you know, I think I used me as an example when Cody and I were talking. It's like, for me growing up, you know, I was a punk rocker, skateboarder, snowboarder, right? Real into music and stuff like that. And I still hunted. But, you know, I kind of wondered after we had that conversation on the podcast, like, would I had any, like, even a deeper connection to hunting whenever I was growing up and held on to it even more closely as I got older, right? If there were folks in the hunting industry or in the outdoor world that I could have related to more, right? And the point that Cody and I were talking about and he was making was that, you know, as much respect as we might have for guys that that are killers, you know, and that are great hunters, like the Drurys and I'm blanking now, you know, on guys' names, but the Adam Hayes of the world and the Don Higgins of the world and stuff like that, right? These guys are great hunters, right? But to like the 22-year-old kid living in the suburb of Cincinnati, you know what I mean, or anywhere in Pennsylvania, any kind of semi-metro area, like they have a vastly different upbringing and outlook on like life in general and their lifestyle, right? And so do they really have a person, you know, because people can argue with me if they like to, but this is just kind of like a sociological fact. Like people like to be around people and relate to people that look like them, sound like them, act like them, and live like them. That's why you can look at your five closest friends and you're all pretty similar. You know what I mean? There's a reason for that. It's not by coincidence. And I feel like hunting to a degree is missing
except
out.
You and I.
Except you and
you're
I.
You're just weird.
Yeah, I'm white trash from Pennsylvania. So so we started kind of talking about that, and it's like I'll open the floor to you to kind of, you know, kind of respond, but I'll make this last point. And the one thing that I had mentioned was we talk about, you know, during that podcast, we were talking about skateboard culture, and this is something I brought up with Wilson as well. And, you know, or take any subculture or counterculture, right? As like, because if you look at the numbers, hunting really is a counterculture, right? We're a minority, right? Like you can't get much more minority than like 4 to 5% of the total population, right? So in thinking of it in that frame, you know, kind of framework, when you look at a subculture or a counterculture like a skateboarding or like a music movement or, you know, whatever it might be. And for me, the two closest from growing up are probably like skateboarding and punk rock. The reason they were able to kind of really withstand the commercialization of their subculture, right? And then when it became not as commercially viable anymore, it like sunk back into them still retaining their culture was because the culture was always kind of created by the people who were on the come up, not from the people who had already achieved, right? The culture was like this living, breathing thing that was always evolving over time. But hunting is the exact opposite of that, where it spends its time, its marketing dollars even, pushing their agenda from the top down, saying here are the pinnacles of this culture. You should aspire to be like them, regardless of whether or not they have anything in common with you, right? As opposed to letting the underground, if you will, right, of hunting be the kind of catalyst for how hunting is going to evolve, shape itself, and make itself accessible to those who might not traditionally look like, feel like, sound like a hunter, right? So those were just kind of like a couple of the conversations I have. I was just curious what your thoughts were on that.
I was actually making a couple of notes here.
Look at that. John going to school. Love it.
It's John's got a million things going on in his life right now, and if he doesn't write stuff down, he just completely forgets it.
Underpants. That's the first thing on your checklist every morning.
Okay. So in response to that, and this is the world that you and I live in with, with marketing. Yep. A guy like Cameron Haynes, he's the Trojan horse.
Yep.
And I don't mean that in a negative way. He already hits a mass audience. So it's just smart marketing to, you know, to have a guy like that, because he's acceptable. Yep. He's acceptable in the hunting, you know, he's accepted in the hunting community, in the running community, in the fitness community, and Joe Rogan, The Rock, you know, those are all people that run in his circle. So that's, you know, that's obviously a technique. It's proven. It's worked. You know, that's how Coca-Cola did it. So, you know, that's how we're going to keep doing it, you know, kind of thing. But other case studies along that same lines, Duck Dynasty. You know, here I am hunting deer and turkey, and my parents' friends, I would bump into them, and they're like, so you still shooting those defenseless animals? I'm like, what? You know? Then the show Duck Dynasty gets popular. Within a year, they're wearing camouflage they're all drinking out of Yeti tumblers, and they're asking me what season is it right now. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Did you get one? All right. Well, hey, I'd love to see pictures of it. You know what? They say those backstraps are pretty good. You know, if you ever fire up the grill, I'd like to come over and try that sometime. But it took Duck Dynasty to bridge the gap. You know, it took that mass acceptance audience. And these are people that were going out and buying Yetis all of a sudden and acting like they were accepting hunting, but they don't even know what end of a shotgun you look down and which end goes, you know, up against your shoulder.
Right.
People like Chris Pratt are mainstream that are very open hunters, and that helps bridge the gap. Mm-hmm. But I think there's always going to be, from like Hollyweird, there's always going to be that, oh, well, people who hunt animals, there's that stigma that we also eat possums on the side of the road. We all make our own moonshine. Mm-hmm. As much as people say, oh, people don't think that that's true, that they're lying to themselves. Mm-hmm. Like their first reaction from people who are not exposed to hunting is, man, that's some hillbilly stuff. You know, that's the stuff that goes on in the Appalachia region or whatever, you know. It's getting better. Mainstream, it's getting better. More and more people are getting involved in hunting. And there's a lot of little things. They're all little, you know, if it's a big set of steps, you've got cinematic footage. That's helping make hunting more acceptable. Oh, that's neat. That was cool. That was really pretty, you know?
Right.
Conservation groups are bridging the gap. You know, these NWTF banquets and QDMA banquets and chapters, they're spreading the word. And I know that we are still losing a lot of hunters every year.
Yeah, so that's,
I think we're gaining a lot of acceptance
along
the way.
No, too. I was going to say, I 100% agree with you. And I think you made a couple of really good points with like campaigns and stuff like that. Like, you know, I think for me, I look at it almost in twofold. The one way that you're kind of expressing it in the sense that there's a two-pronged attack, right? There's the acceptance component of it, right? Which I think, like, I agree with you. Shows like Duck Dynasty, as much as it's you know, dramatized a little bit or whatever, maybe they don't 100% represent, you know, hunters as a whole. They are in a good place to kind of make things okay for hunting at large, right? Like, get that.
Sure, sure.
Joe Rogan too. Cam Haines is one, though, that I look at and I say, like, okay, let me finish this part of it. So I think there's that part of it. Then I think there's the other part of it that is more the recruitment aspect of it, right? Because, you know, the studies that they've done, if you look at just deer hunting is the one that I know off the top of my head, but like 80% of the country basically says like, it's okay to deer hunt and we're cool with it so long as you're doing it for food. Right. So like, there's pretty high level of acceptance, like from the jump, as long as like the person who they're talking to is doing it for the right reasons. Right. To a degree. When I look at it from a recruitment standpoint, like, I don't know that Duck Dynasty really helps recruitment per se. I think a guy like Cam Haines does, and this is the reason why, is because he's attached to a subculture. He's attached to an additional counterculture. He's attached to that running endurance culture, right? And so, sure, like, that is, to me, like, the part of it that is missing for most of the hunting upper echelon, right? It's like, it's just hunting, right? And there's nothing else, right? Because, you know, I look at, as for me, as an example, it's like, hunting is like, is really, really important to me and obviously super passionate about it, but it's still just like a piece of who I am. You know what I mean? Like, there's this, the hunter piece, which kind of overwhelms everything, right? But there's also the musician. There's also the guy who still likes to bust out the skateboard once in a while in his driveway at 41 years old and hurt himself. You know, so there's, you know, the guy who's into MMA and stuff like that. And that's the part that I think that we're missing the opportunity is that, like, we are able to be, you know, layered individuals as hunters. We don't have to just be a hunter. And when we look at some at some of the beacons that we have, that we always see is like the people pressed out in front of people is like, this is what hunting is. It's a lot of times not the Cameron Haynes's and guys like that necessarily that are, you know, multifaceted, you know what I mean? That appeal to a different audience, right? They appeal to one. Now, I think they're making some strides, right? Because there's some MMA guys that hunt. You know, I know Chad Mendez is a big hunter, right? So that kind of opens up some pathways into like the MMA folks, you know. But, you know, MMA still is like I don't know how big that counterculture is, but it's like, you know, I don't know how urban that is either. Because for hunting recruitment, it's like we have to figure out ways to bring people from the suburbs and from the urban areas because that's where people are at. You know what I mean? Like that's where we're going to recruit from. And so we have to figure out how do we make this accessible, you know, and look appealing to them because they don't feel like an outsider, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think somebody living in the country, they probably have already been exposed to hunting.
Yep.
They have opportunities to hunt and it's just simply, it's their choice at that point. You know what I mean? If it's something they want to do or not. And I 100% agree. I mean, in the urban situations, those people, the hardest thing about hunting is a place to go do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if they grew up in a subdivision and they don't have any place to go, that's getting harder and harder, you know?
Yeah.
Now, you and I, we've had podcasts before where we've talked about leases and the pros and the cons and that kind of stuff and procurement of leases and how to keep them and stuff. But I tell you, man, it's an interesting thing, and like you were saying, yeah, hunting. When I first started hunting, I was snowboarding still,
mm-hmm.
I was driving a stock car still, and I was still a cop, and I was going to the gym, and so yeah, hunting was just something else that I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was just another hobby, but the more I did it, the more it consumed me, and then I sold my snowboards.
Yep.
And then I sold my race cars. And then I quit being a cop because I wanted to work in the outdoor industry full time. So that was my choice via opportunity as well. But then it became, okay, I am a hunter in whether it be photography or marketing or hobbies. Pretty much everything I do now revolves around hunting in some way, shape, or form, you know?
Yep.
And I think you're going to have that. I don't think you have to have that to be extremely passionate about the sport or, you know, about conservation. I think your level of, you know, as and I know you agree, a person's level of involvement will be dictated by how much they just really want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I mean, you look at a guy like our buddy who we did the first podcast that we started kind of talking about this idea of like how different things influence hunting and stuff like that. It's Cody, you know what I mean? It's like I don't think anyone would question his passion for hunting whitetails. You know what I mean? But if you knew him more than just, you know, listening to him on podcast or whatever, you would realize that like there's a very close second in his world, and that is lifting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And bodybuilding, you know what I mean? And it's like, and so even though he's a straight killer, you know what I mean? And like, you would be hard pressed to find a dude who's more ate up with whitetails than him.
Yeah.
Like there's this other part of him that is very important to him still also, you know what I mean? And I think, and that's the part that I'm looking at is that, you know, people who are as ate up with it as like, you know, you or I, or people that are listening to the show and stuff like that. Not everyone that is going to hunt and contribute to our community is going to be as in it as we are. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and what I'm more looking for is how do we create representatives of our community that are also have their hands in other communities that we can pull people from, I think is the best way I could phrase it. And I love
almost, it's almost kind of networking.
Yeah. And that's kind of like where I've been. Cause I was just like, when you mentioned the Cam Haynes, like example, like I immediately was like, that's the perfect example because he's a celebrity. Yes. But like, even if he weren't necessarily a celebrity, right. And say he was a, you know, I don't know. Say he was like a regional, like a well-known regional, like hunter, right. That like people like in his area know him, right? And he was big into like endurance training, and he was known well in that circle as well. Like, he would have a lot of influence in that region, being able to influence people to, one, at least be okay with hunting, and two, maybe try it, that are runners, because he can say, hey, you know, I use this as like a way to remain healthy and give me the energy I need to do these endurance initiatives and stuff like that, right? It's just icing on the cake that he's as popular as he is. But, you know, just imagine if we did that, but there actually is a well-known skateboarder. He's a legend, actually. I think his name's Gregory Raleigh. Like, he was out probably around the time you and I were like graduating from high school, is when he came over from the UK. And he is a diehard gun nut and like backcountry hunter, and owns like 3 skateboard companies and is like a legend in skateboarding. And so a guy like that, like being able to leverage in like a space like skateboarding would be incredible, because I know there are people there that would be into hunting, that kind of extreme, you know, experience. They just need someone that looks like them to say, hey, dude, it's cool. It's okay to try it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'll get off my soapbox for now. It's John's probably got some other state he's going to do something that I have no clue that he's going to go do. And then we'll talk about it the next time we talk. But before we take off, man, is there anything you got going on or coming up that you want to give anyone a heads up about? Anything cool coming out?
Let's see. So I'm going to be heading to Indiana and doing some photo film work. But then after that, Easter Sunday, I'm driving through the night out to Nebraska with some buddies, with Randy Sanders from Beetlejuice Skullworks. You met him at the Iowa show.
Yep.
I'm going out to Nebraska turkey hunting with him and a couple of his buddies, and I will be doing a Instagram takeover for Chama Chairs. So be sure to check out, tune in to Chama Chairs while I do that takeover thing. Nice. Should be fun. Hopefully it's fun. Hopefully I don't screw it up, and hopefully cool things are happening and I can keep the engagement going and keep a good story going there. So that'll be a lot of fun. When I get done with that, I'm going back to Whitetail Heaven Outfitters for their second turkey competition. This time, the first place prize is $50,000.
Jeez. Man.
Yeah. We're talking serious cash money.
Yeah, dude. One could buy a lot of turkey calls with that.
You could buy you buy a lot of diaphragm calls.
Right.
You get the old raspy hen, few raspy hens
get
with that.
Get yourself a couple raspy hens. Probably get down to the corner and buy yourself a bunch of raspy hens down there too.
You could just buy hens, the real thing. And then after that, I don't come home. I then go to that property in northern Kentucky in Bracken County where I hunt, where I hunt every year for spring birds in Kentucky, and do a little deer hunting as well. So I get to go hang out with my good buddy, Mr. Parker. Just the coolest old timer in the world, and he's probably in better shape than I am. But so go hang out with him for a few days.
You keep eating his tornadoes, he'll be in better shape than you.
Dude, I'm telling you, I swear, every time, like when I'm out of town, I eat clean. But I also, when I'm driving from point A to point B, I hate to like stop at a restaurant, you know. GPS said your arrival time was 8 p.m. and then you get back in your car and now it's, you know, 9:30 p.m. because you stopped at a restaurant and ate for an hour, hour and a half. So I literally, man, I'm a gas station guy where I only stop to use the restroom and eat at one stop. I'm stopping one place. And if I get lucky and it's like a gas station / Subway, it's better. But if it's just like a Speedway,
tornadoes.
I'm getting 87 octane and tornadoes.
Nice. All right, man. Well, the sounds of it is that you and I probably aren't going to get to talk and catch up again for like another month. So,
no,
and that's all right.
Two and a half, three weeks.
All right.
2.5, 3 weeks. I'll be back home, and I can do more, or we can always do them on the road. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter to me.
We should do that. We should do an Instagram live one. Straight live.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Do one of those. Maybe we'll have to work that out. I got to get my technology squared away because our technology at the beginning of this before we got started recording was an unmitigated disaster. But we pulled her off.
And when I'm on the road, it doesn't matter where I'm at. I'll have better cell service than in Iowa.
No doubt. No doubt. Copy that. Check Charlie.
Yep.
All right, brother. Well, I'm going to let you get going, dude. And I will talk to you soon. You get after some birds. I'm going to do the same. Then hopefully when we get back together, we'll have a couple birds down.
There. I like it. Sounds good, man.
All right, brother. All right, folks, it is a wrap for today's show. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. And if you haven't yet, please head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast while you're there as well. We'd be super appreciative if you'd be able to do those two things for us. And if you haven't yet, please remember to head over to the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers website, the Pennsylvania chapter page, and head to the RSVP page for the Muster in the Mountains gathering on June 22nd and 23rd. I will certainly be there with my family and hope to see you all there as well. Before I shut this thing down, I need to give a big shout out to our partners that continue to help us make this podcast possible. Exodus Outdoor Gear, Skull Brew Coffee Company, Obsession Bows, Ramcat Broadheads, Trophy Taker Rests, and Dead Down Wind. And until next time, we'll see y'all. I could show you through the door. I ain't welcome anymore. Long time coming, if it all. It takes a special knowing to call a fall. Damaged heads, broken letters. Rationalize yourself in numbers, but I gotta get away from here.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
You'd think, with four of us spread out on a tiny island, that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But, as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.